All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we're going to be talking about the Falcons' addition of fullback Jalston Fowler and what that means for the competition at that position, as well as looking a little bit and giving an overview of phase two of the preseason.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team. Every day.
All right, guys. You know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for over a decade at FalFans.com. You can find me on Twitter at FalFans. And, of course, I am the host of this illustrious Locked on Falcons podcast. Today, we're going to be talking fullbacks. We've talked quite a bit about fullback. This is Locked on Fullbacks, after all. But we've talked quite a bit about the fullback competition. We got some roster moves from the Falcons made. They added veteran Jalston Fowler, formerly of the Tennessee Titans, most recently with the Seattle Seahawks, who he signed with this past offseason and was cut last week. They've made some other roster moves that we'll touch upon. As regular listeners have known, I've talked about the preseason sort of looking at it in three phases. The first two games were coming off of the end of phase one. We're going into phase two and sort of giving my thoughts on why that sort of outlook and that sort of three-phase outlook is important, and a little bit more details on why I sort of view that sort of thing. So without further ado, let's jump into talking about Jalston Fowler. Monday, the Falcons signed Jalston Fowler as well as wide receiver Julian Williams, an undrafted free agent out of Florida International that I believe dabbled in the Spring League earlier this year. To make room for those two players, the Falcons wound up cutting fullback Luke McNitt as well as wide receiver Taj Williams. Not a surprise that both of those guys got the axe. It didn't seem either one of those guys was really poised to make the roster or really make a strong push for the practice squad as well. As you may recall, there is no longer a 75-man cut down before the final preseason game like there used to be. That's been the case, I think, at least the last 2 years, if not longer. But in all likelihood, if there still was a 75-player cut down, then guys like McNitt and Williams probably would have been among the first 15 guys to go on the 90-man roster. And speaking of which, before we jump into the whole issue with the fullback position, just as a sidebar, I would basically, you know, in previous years, I would also often make predictions about who were going to be the first guys cut as part of the whole process of sort of predicting the final roster. And this year, if I was to wager that again, I would probably list McNitt and Williams, Terrence McGee, fellow wide receivers with Williams, Cody Pearson, Lamar Jordan, offensive lineman Daniel Brunskill, Celesi Uhatefi, tight end Jaden Graham, kicker David Marvin, defensive end McKendie Cheridor, linebacker Emmanuel Smith, cornerback Ryan Neal, and safety Cedric Cooper. Now, that's only 13 guys, including McNitt and Williams, so the last two would probably be two defensive players that I'm sort of on the fence about, you know, maybe Leon McFadden, maybe Richard Jarvis, maybe a DB like Tyson Graham or Chris Lammons or something like that. But just as an aside, let's talk a little bit about why the Falcons signed Jalston Fowler. I suspect a lot of it had to do with the fact that Ricky Ortiz is injured. We don't know as of today when I'm recording this on Monday evening what exactly the nature of Ortiz's injury, but it was noted by ESPN's Vaughn McClure that during Sunday's practice, he was wearing a black non-contact jersey. And so, we'll find out more information about this, but I think the addition of Fowler at least strongly signals that, you know, Ortiz will miss at least a few days of practice, maybe longer. We can certainly speculate if that would possibly be longer. I think, you know, I would guess, again, this is pure speculation on my part, but I would guess that this probably means that he might miss this upcoming game against the Jaguars, and we'll talk about this later. But in phase two, a.k.a. the point in the preseason where you need to get your guys for the ready for the regular season, Ortiz missing this week could wind up being important. I think if you were confident that he was going to be ready to go for the preseason finale, I do think that does offset that a little bit. The Falcons are playing the Dolphins at home in 9 days. And so you could justify maybe going with a tight end or something like that this week to sort of fill that role if you were confident that Ortiz would be back, you know, by the end of the preseason. But I think that the fact that the Falcons added Fowler kind of hints that maybe Ortiz might miss longer than a week, might miss more than a couple of days, and maybe puts his status for week one in jeopardy. Maybe, again, I'm purely speculating here. The issue that the Falcons are facing is the fact that even if you were confident that Ortiz was only going to miss one game, you know, adding another fullback is a smart move. And I think part of that is due to what we've talked about on previous multiple episodes, where we talked about one of the question marks with this fullback position was the limited number of reps the team has to go around at that spot. And we talked about this extensively in the training camp preview series at the end of June, and I'll link to that in the show notes on FalcFans.com as well as LockedOnFalcons.com. But to review that, you know, talked about how three fullbacks in training camp could ultimately be a hindrance for the Falcons because they wouldn't have enough reps to go around and really to evaluate everybody fairly, as well as get whoever the player that ultimately wins that competition, whether it's Ricky Ortiz, Luke McNitt, or Daniel Marks. And all of those guys had zero NFL playing experience, at least in the regular season, getting those guys ready for the regular season. And I think when they cut Marks early in camp, that helped streamline the issue a little bit, and they limited McNitt's reps during the preseason game. But when you look at Ortiz, he's only played 21 total snaps through the first two preseason games. And even if you say, you know, he plays the same amount over the next two, is 40 snaps really enough to get a guy ready for the regular season, particularly a guy that has little experience? If Ortiz was a three-year veteran, that's probably more than enough. If Ortiz was a higher profile player like a Calvin Ridley, where a guy like Ridley can somewhat rest or rely on his natural abilities to sort of get by at times, that's not really the case with Ortiz, a fullback, you know, an undrafted talent. He doesn't have that luxury. And I think now if you assume Ortiz is going to miss this week's game, you know, how many snaps is he going to need to compensate in that preseason finale? Is it 10 snaps? Is it 20 snaps? And then what happens if he winds up getting injured? And you can remember back in 2015 when Patrick DeMarco and Colin Mooney were fighting for the fullback position, those guys were pretty much neck and neck going into that final game, and Mooney got hurt. And while I do think DeMarco probably would have ultimately won the competition, even if Mooney had stayed healthy, the fact that he did get injured pretty much, you know, put the nail in that coffin. And, you know, as an aside, you know, it does make you think a little bit about sort of the what-if scenario of what would this podcast's brand be if Mooney had won that competition, the Falcons had wound up cutting Patrick DeMarco. You know, I don't know if I would be as ride or die for Colin Mooney as I have been for Patrick DeMarco, but I digress. And so the issue is if Ortiz played in that preseason final and got hurt, the Falcons would be pretty much screwed at the fullback position. So I think adding a player like Fowler makes a lot of sense, not only as a good insurance policy, I do think he adds a little bit to the competition, certainly more to the competition than sort of Luke McNitt added at the position. Now we'll talk about a little bit later whether or not this is really still the point in the preseason where you're still trying to get guys, you know, where you still want guys to compete. But that's something we'll talk about a little bit later. We'll take a little bit more of a deeper look at, you know, what exactly Jalston Fowler brings to the table in the moment. But I want to plug our daily draft podcast, Locked On NFL Draft, with hosts John Ledyard and Trevor Sikkema, as well as the Draft Dudes podcast with hosts Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs, newly part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you are one of those people that obsess about 2019 roster moves, and I know you do, which includes the draft, then why not get that going by going and subscribing to both podcasts, as well as checking out all four guys' content at thedraftnetwork.com. Again, that's the word thedraftnetwork.com, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So let's talk about Jalston Fowler. I think in a nutshell, Fowler is sort of your typical smash mouth fullback hailing from the SEC. You know, was drafted by the Titans, I think in the fourth round back in 2015. You know, he's sort of a physical fullback, more in that Ovi Mahaly mold, not necessarily to the level of Ovi Mahaly, but, you know, nobody is at that level. No one is elite like Ovi Mahaly. My love for Patrick DeMarco is only surpassed by my love for Ovi Mahaly. You know, I challenge anybody to go back and watch the Falcons running game from 2008 to 2010 and not fall in love with Ovi Mahaly. It's impossible. But I digress. In terms of what Fowler brings to the table, he really does fit that sort of I formation, power oriented, straight up the gut, you know, sort of run game. And, you know, that was what the Titans tried to be under Mike Mularkey. It's not a coincidence that Mike Mularkey also happened to be the offensive coordinator where Ovi Mahaly was there. So I think that's one of the reasons why the Titans were, you know, partially attracted to Jocelyn Fowler, you know, 3 years ago when they drafted him. Now, typically, that's not necessarily the type of offense that the Falcons run. You know, we're more of an outside zone scheme, but, you know, it's not a sort of strictly one or the other. They certainly have their fair share of times when, you know, that fullback's going to lead the running back up the middle. Particularly, you know, it seems to be a little bit more often when Tevin Coleman is in the game. And one of the interesting nuggets from last season was how much more effective Tevin Coleman was. You know, some of his best running, at least in terms of measuring success rate, was when the fullback was in the game, while Devontae Freeman typically was better when there were three wide receivers on the field and wasn't having Derek Coleman messing up his flow or whatnot. But I digress. I think the interesting thing about Fowler is going to be in terms of where he fits with the Falcons because of their run scheme. You know, more often than not, they run that offset eye and they're asking that fullback to more than sort of smashing it up the gut. They're more asking him to make that kick out block on the edge. And, you know, that's not necessarily where Fowler's greatest strength is. He can do that, certainly. But when you ask him to block more in space rather than the sort of confined area that you have in that typical downhill run game, that's where he's a little bit more prone to missing some of his assignments. I think he's an effective receiver. He doesn't get a lot of usage in Tennessee in that capacity, but from everything I can tell, you know, he's an effective, you know, outlet receiver when you throw him the football in the flat and you sort of can get those 6 to 8 yard gains. We saw that a couple of times with Ricky Ortiz this past week against Kansas City. It was a regular part of the offense to Patrick DeMarco. And by regular, I mean, it would happen like what, 5 times a year or 10 times a year or whatever the case may be. Fowler can do that just fine. He also is a contributor on special teams. He's also done a little bit of work in short yardage for the Titans over the years. You know, none of those things he's going to stand out in. He doesn't necessarily, you know, have these sort of standout traits. But the one thing that he does bring to the table that Ortiz doesn't necessarily bring is having a little bit more of that oomph, a little bit more of that pop when it comes to hitting those downhill run blocks. You know, one of the things I noted on Saturday's episode when they talked in the rapid reaction talking about what Ortiz did in that Chiefs game was he did a very good job hitting his assignments, whether it was as the lead blocker, whether it was as a pass protector, but he doesn't necessarily bring that oomph in the run game that's going to necessarily clear the hole. And as I noted, Patrick DeMarco didn't necessarily do that when he first arrived in Atlanta back in 2013 and 2014. But as time wore on, he was able to refine his technique and refine his skill and do a better job using leverage so that when he did hit those blocks, you did see the defender go back more often than Patrick DeMarco did and bring a little bit more of that pop in 2015 and 2016. And not coincidentally, that's the point in time where, you know, I fell in love with my second fullback in my life. And, you know, one would have hoped or one could hope that Ortiz could develop that in time. You know, Fowler, having been in the league for a couple of years, you know, certainly in being a little bit burlier, certainly already has that to a certain extent. I think this is going to be interesting moving forward because I think a lot of it will sort of depend on how long this Ortiz is out of the lineup. Is that a couple of days? Is that a week? Is that 2 weeks? Is that longer? And that will sort of determine how big a competition this is at this point. And the longer Ortiz is out of the lineup, the higher the chances that Fowler has to take his job and wind up being the Falcons, you know, starting fullback week one. I think at this point in time, without knowing enough information on sort of what is sort of the issue with Ortiz, or at least appeared to be, 2 days ago on Sunday, right now, to me, it's a complete toss-up sort of determining who's going to be the fullback position. So at least it reinvigorates me to be, you know, at least in when we get to this upcoming Jaguars game, to be a little bit more excited about that fullback competition, although I had seemingly been, you know, content with sort of where Ortiz was moving forward. So, you know, it instills a little bit more, I don't know if excitement is the word, interest in that sort of situation. Now, the interesting thing is going to be with Fowler, is he going, you know, even though he's played 3 years in the league, and so necessarily giving him in-game preseason reps isn't as necessary as it would have been with Ortiz to get him ready for the first game of the season. The fact that he is making the transition to a new offense that is very different from the one that he ran at Tennessee is going to be interesting as well. Now, the good thing is, you know, Fowler's a fullback. He's not a quarterback. So it's not as if he's got to learn the entire playbook or anything. The Falcons can somewhat simplify things for him. But there is going to be somewhat of a learning curve. And even if you like what Fowler brings on the field, if he doesn't necessarily have a firm grasp on the offense, that's going to limit how many opportunities and reps he can give him when, you know, the real games actually start to happen. Now, I don't think the Falcons will have too much of an issue with this, simply because we've talked about in the past how the Falcons may or may not want to be, or, you know, may want to be a little bit more of a three wide receiver offense, given the addition of Calvin Ridley and sort of all the reps that you would normally give to the fullback, whether it's, you know, 10 or 15 snaps a game that they would normally do, or at least in previous years might have done. You know, maybe with Fowler, if he's not necessarily up to speed to the level that you want him to be, maybe that number goes down to 5. And then those additional 5 to 10 other snaps go to Ridley and or, you know, the number two tight end, in this case, probably going to be Logan Paulson. And if, you know, if Ridley's getting 5+ more snaps a game, that's probably one or more extra targets for him per game. And, you know, I don't think anybody's going to necessarily complain too much about that. So it really is sort of first world problems with the fullback position, where this is a situation that was very much a tenuous situation going into training camp. But due to the solid play of Ortiz, due to the addition of Fowler, I feel like the Falcons are in a pretty good spot moving forward. So whatever decisions need to happen between now and September 6th when the season kicks off, I think the Falcons are in a pretty good position. But that being said, we'll come back and finish up this episode by giving a little bit more of an overview of what phase two of the preseason means. And before we do that, I do want to say that this podcast is going to start pivoting a little bit more to the regular season. And maybe you guys want to get a jump on the regular season, getting a lowdown on the Philadelphia Eagles by checking out Locked On Eagles podcast with host Lou DiBiase, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So for the four of you that don't listen to this podcast on a daily basis, I first want to say, what are you doing with your life that you're not taking the time, whether it's 25 or 45 minutes out of every day of your life to listen to me? Clearly, you're making horrible life decisions. But for those of you that, you know, don't listen on a regular basis or haven't listened recently, you know, I've talked about on recent episodes talking about the preseason sort of in three different phases. And this is sort of how I break it down. And I think this is a good way of sort of looking at it for the rest of you. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sharing it with you. The first phase, as I've discussed, is really, to me, combining the first two preseason games. I think this is more about setting a baseline for players, and particularly is really important for young players. I think you want to see those guys put their best foot forward in the first game. And if not in the first game, then in the second game, make improvements, make strides. If guys do put that good foot forward, then you want to see them maintain that going into the second game and not see any sort of dip in the second game. I think this is also a good opportunity to help identify some of the second-year players and the third-year players that have been in your system for now for a year or two, and seeing which of those guys have made the leap. Because as I've discussed on previous podcasts, and you've heard Dan Quinn talk about quite a bit over the summer, a big important part of sort of the evaluation process is seeing which guys make that leap from year one to year two and year two to year three, because that can often inform you in terms of what that guy's future potential is going to be in this league. And, you know, we can use examples. We can say one guy that has made the leap is DeMonte Casey. One guy that hasn't made that leap is Duke Riley. And speaking on Riley's behalf, it doesn't necessarily mean that his NFL career is over, as some people seem to be trying to imply out there. But it does mean that we're going to have to wait and see if over the next 12 months he makes that leap. And if he does, then, you know, good for him and good for us, I guess. If he doesn't, then it probably is not a strong indicator that he's going to at the very least outlast his rookie contract here in Atlanta. You know, there certainly are plenty of journeyman linebackers out there in the league, and he might get opportunities elsewhere in the league. And if he manages to take advantage of those, he could wind up playing another 5 years in the NFL beyond playing in Atlanta. But if he doesn't, then maybe that number is 5 months instead. And, you know, at this point, who knows? But in contrast, you look at a guy like Casey, who seemingly has made the leap. That doesn't necessarily guarantee that he's going to necessarily play beyond his rookie contract in terms of sticking in Atlanta. But it's more likely going to be due not to the fact that he isn't good enough, but because someone else is going to look at him and say, oh, that guy should be making a lot more money and starting games for us. And again, it's not to sit here and say that, you know, Casey is destined to be a starter in this league. You know, there's certainly a lot of variables, unknown variables in the future that will have to play into that, including performance and durability, et cetera. But you do feel a lot better about a guy going to be able to take advantage of future opportunities because he's already taken advantage of the current opportunities he's had because he's made that leap. And I think phase two is really where we are now. And I think this phase is really about the sort of all-important, I use air quotes, all-important third preseason game, which is often the dress rehearsal game where you often see NFL teams playing their starters for the entirety of the first half, and oftentimes will also even play them in for a series into the third quarter as part of this sort of simulation of making halftime adjustments. And this is what this game is really about, similar to what a dress rehearsal would be for a play. It is a simulation of sort of what you expect to see in the regular season. This is a week where the Falcons sort of are mirroring and mimicking exactly what they're going to do during the regular season in a typical work week, as well as do more game planning this game. As you know, they do some game planning for preseason game. I know I've said they don't game plan, but it's like comparatively, it's a very basic game plan and the other preseason games compare it to what this one. But even that said, this isn't like necessarily even to the level, again, of a regular season game plan, which, again, I mentioned before that they've been game planning for this upcoming Eagles game basically since April. You know, they're not game planning for this third preseason game like the Jaguars like they have. And certainly subsequent regular season games won't have as intensive game plans, or will have more intensive game plans than this week's action against the Jaguars. But all that being said, you know, this phase comes after the phase where you've already seen guys sort of establish where they are. But again, this is about gearing up for the regular season. And I think it's important to get guys ready for the regular season, particularly in this phase. And you look at the Falcons roster, I would say, you know, maybe six, at most seven of their 53 spots are sort of up in the air. I think for the other 46 or 47 guys, most of those guys are fairly safe, fairly likely to be on the roster. I wouldn't say they're like 99 or 100% locks to make the team, but I would say probably of those 46 or 47 guys, their chances of making the roster are above, say, 85% or in the 90s for the vast majority of them. And I think for those guys, this phase two, where it's about regular season prep, that's what the preseason is really about. It's about gearing up to get to this phase. You know, the previous phases is less about establishing that sort of baseline for where the players are as part of the evaluation, but it's the training camp and the early games are about gearing up to get ready for this game, which is going to be basically a simulation of the regular season. And I think, you know, for the younger guys, phase one is a critical point and is a really critical point. But for some of these more established guys, you know, that several of them that have been with the Falcons since the start of the Dan Quinn era, or if not, have been in the league for, you know, 4 or 5 plus years before arriving in Atlanta, you know, they basically know how the preseason works, and it's about getting geared up for this game. And I think most of those guys aren't necessarily laying in bed worrying about whether or not they're going to have a job come September. And again, it's not to suggest that all of those guys have 100% job security, but their focus has been and always has been about what do I need to do to get ready for September, and what do I need to do to get ready for, you know, hopefully January, and how can I help this team win games in between those time, that period of time. And I think this third game is really important for establishing that. And I think that does lead to some people having a tendency to overrate how critical this game, or at least in terms of how predictive or indicative or whatever word you want to use for what it means for the regular season. But I do think it can certainly inform you in a lot of ways. We saw, you know, a couple of years ago in that third preseason game against the Dolphins, certain offensive linemen weren't quite ready for the regular season, and that forced the Falcons, or compelled the Falcons, to go out there and add players like Andy LaVitre and Jake Long and Gino Gradkowski and Bryce Harris to the roster in order to get guys that were ready, you know, for the regular season to help out on this offensive line. I think the mistake that people do tend to have, though, is they have a tendency to look at whatever happens in this third preseason game and then basically extrapolate that of that's what's going to happen over the course of the 16 regular season games. And I can't stress enough that, you know, that's not really a good way of viewing things. You know, there's so many different variables and so many different challenges that the regular season presents that cannot be simulated, cannot be, you know, mirrored and mimicked in the preseason. And so you have to sort of treat them as separate entities, that there is some bleed over, but I think people have a tendency to overestimate how much bleed over that is. And I think, you know, one way of seeing that is sort of looking at the amount of pressure that is on the team going into this preseason game. Like, it doesn't compare to what is the case in the regular season. Just as an example, you know, if the Falcons struggle to score this weekend against the Jaguars, you're not going to see a Falcon come out and tell Robert Klimko and throw Sark under the bus like they did after that Patriots loss last year. Like, it's just not that critical in the preseason. So I think, you know, pay attention, not to say that this game is meaningless, but it's probably not as meaningful as some people seem to portray. And, like, you know, let's give an example, a more concrete example of sort of what we need, what we're talking about when we're talking about getting prepared for the regular season by looking at a specific player like Eric Saubert. You know, you look at if Saubert does play well in this game, then I think the Falcons can feel a lot more confident about incorporating him as a regular part of this offense, whether that's as the second tight end in 2 tight end sets, whether that's the third tight end in their 3 tight end sets, or 13 personnel, which the Falcons under Sark mostly scrapped last season and partially scrapped in the second half of 2016 as well, once Jacob Tammy went down with an injury. And basically, not to say that, you know, how well Saubert performs will directly indicate how much 13 personnel they use this year, but they are somewhat related. And the better Saubert performs, the more likely it is that the Falcons will feel more confidence with utilizing those 3 tight end sets with Saubert incorporated in that. And so if you see him get work with the first unit and does a good job in terms of hitting his assignments, whether that's as a blocker or as a receiver, again, that speaks to the Falcons being a little bit more confident that come the regular season, he will be able to repeat those things. It doesn't guarantee it. It doesn't necessarily, you know, say that he will definitely do or don't do those things, definitely will or won't do those things. But it does indicate that maybe, you know, if he doesn't do those things, then maybe the Falcons need to be a little bit more reliant on the veteran and Logan Paulson and see where Saubert is later in the season after, you know, a month or two of additional practice. Now, if we watch Saubert go out there and get very limited reps with the starters and do very little, then that's also sort of signaling that the Falcons may not be as confident in him as they might want to be. And, you know, again, this is a more of an example and not necessarily a definitive statement of saying, oh, if Saubert only plays five snaps in the first half this week, then that definitely means that the Falcons are scrapping their 13 personnel. But it is a great opportunity for him and his coaching staff to really see what he is capable of. And, you know, phase three isn't really about that. Phase three is that final, that fourth preseason game. And that's really more about the guys, you know, if we say 47 guys are pretty safe, that means there's 43 guys that aren't really safe. And it's really about those 43 guys and their last-ditch efforts to make the team, whether that's the 53-man roster, whether that's the practice squad, the 10-man practice squad, or at least show out in the hopes that some other team, you know, they can catch another team's eye and keep their NFL dreams alive. Because the truth be told, for a lot of those guys, a lot of these 43 guys that may not be safe, or, you know, on the outside looking in, you know, this summer with the Falcons is really going to be their only real shot at playing in the NFL. Now, some of them might catch on in Canada. Some of them might catch on with any of the other various semi-pro leagues or whatnot. You know, ideally, the NFL could also have a developmental league that could sort of act as a safety net as well. But that's a rant for another day. But going back to my example with Saubert, you know, putting him out there in the field in this final preseason game against third and fourth stringers, you know, for 40 plus snaps, isn't going to really tell you whether or not if you play him for 5 to 10 snaps against the Eagles in week one, whether or not he's going to be capable of making that kickout block against Nigel Bradham, or whether or not if he's trying to run a route against Malcolm Jenkins, or later in the season when the Falcons are playing the Panthers and he's trying to run a route against Colin Jones, like that fourth preseason game is not going to really tell you whether or not he's capable of doing that. This third preseason game, I think you can glean a little bit of that sort of things from him. And so that's sort of really what it's about. So, you know, that's basically all I want to say about phase two. We'll certainly talk a little bit about phase three next week when we after we get through this game and talking about sort of all the bubble guys, you know, whether that number, whether it's 43 guys sort of fighting for six spots or seven spots or whatever that number is, we'll certainly talk about that next week's show. In the meantime, we'll try to get some fan talks later this week to gear you guys up for Saturday's game because the game is, you know, not during the work week. Then we have a few more days to get other people's fan reactions. I have the strong suspicion that Duke Riley is going to be a very notable topic of discussion if and when we have those fan talks later this week. But if you guys have additional questions, comments, suggestions, or whatever, you can send them over to me on Twitter. I'm at FalcFans. If it's podcast related, just let me know in that tweet. But if it is podcast related, just go ahead and send it to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. If you don't like Twitter and you prefer Facebook, head on over to Locked On Falcons. That's the Facebook page. Give us a like while you're there. If you prefer email, that's lockedonfalcons@mail.com. If you're interested in doing a fan talk, that's the place to hit me up. Email lockedonfalcons@mail.com. Let me know what your availability is and what your contact information, whether you have Skype, whether you have a phone number. Either one works. And you can also, of course, leave a comment at lockedonfalcons.com or falcfans.com where the show is posted daily. All right, guys. Until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.